A te mare, te whānau, nau mahare mai ki te reo irirangi poho, kei te whakarongo koe ki te parakuihi. Morena, you're listening to 95BFM, this is Breakfast, and it's time for our monthly catch-up with the National Party. I'm lucky to be joined by Minister for Mental Health, Matt Ducey. Morena.
Morena, good morning.
How are you this morning, Minister?
Very good, especially after listening to that song. Wake up call.
It's like a caffeinated sort of, a good wake up call. I agree. I'm glad you enjoyed it. It must be a very, very busy time for you all. I'm sure the Christmas rush is well and truly set in.
Yeah, very much so. Today's actually the last day of Parliament sitting. So we have some cabinet committees this morning, question time, and then the adjournment debate. Look, it's been a big year, but like most Kiwis, we're looking forward to working through to Christmas and then having some time off with loved ones.
And on that sort of busy period, there's been a lot happening just in the last couple of weeks. I put in about 16 requests with national ministers who have declined interviews, which I went through my list and I counted. And last week, in the penultimate sitting week for the House, 12 bills were debated, 11 of which under urgency. I can't help but feel as though maybe that might have something to do with the reason why so many national ministers have declined interview requests?
Yeah, it will be, and it's a shame that it just fell on that week. Look, I've been in Parliament now for coming up 12 years. I've been in government and opposition, and normally it is busy for any government coming up to the finishing of Parliament, and normally each year we go into urgency to finish those bills off that have a statutory requirement to ensure they either get to select committees or they're passed in time to get the raw assent from the Governor-General.
What would you say to those who feel as though perhaps this is feeling a little bit threatening to democracy, 11 bills being passed or debated under urgency in the House in 1 week and national ministers avoiding the media?
Yeah, I don't think they're avoiding the media. Myself as a minister, like my colleagues, we talk to the media every day, probably feels like every hour, because of course the press gallery operates within Parliament and there's regular check-in times. For instance, most will see on TV when we go walk through to question time, there's all the media there, and of course they can ask any questions of the day. So we're always engaging. And also, like I say, urgency is no different every year under any government, just before the House rises, to ensure you get the right bills through the legislative programme.
Well, regardless, thank you for making the time for a kōrero this morning. We're here to talk a little bit about the alcohol levy, because you've made some comments recently that you'd be open to another tax hike on this next year. If we rewind to last year, we saw the levy raised from $11.5 million to $16.6 million a year, the first rise that we've seen since 2009, but even then, less than half the recommendation of $37.3 million. Why was the hike so small?
Yeah, I think we should just be clear with language first. So with alcohol, we have an excise tax. So I'm not talking about the tax. That would be for the Minister of Revenue of how much we tax alcohol. But as New Zealand's first Minister for Mental Health, I'm responsible for the alcohol levy. Now, that is a levy that is put on alcohol to support harm reduction initiatives. And as you say in your introduction, we're actually the first government in 15 years to raise the alcohol levy. We took it at about $11.5 million a year to $16.5 million. What we did receive is a report from Allen and Clark that did say not only is it about raising the levy, but it was also about implementing a new investment framework, because the advice I got was they weren't confident that what we were spending the levy on was actually delivering results. So we accepted all those recommendations, and in that time we've implemented a new investment framework to make sure that when we do invest the alcohol levy, it is actually delivering and making a change.
But even then, the hike in the levy is so insignificant. It's not even keeping up with inflation. It increased the price of a can of beer by less than half a cent. Is that even going to make a dent in terms of alcohol harm reduction?
The alcohol levy is not used as a pricing mechanism. Whether you look at, say, the UK, which move to a cost per minimum standard. It's not used in that, but like you say, you know, first government in 15 years to actually recognise the existing levy needed to be increased. I think that's a good acknowledgement of this government taking alcohol harm reduction seriously. As mentioned in my scrutiny week hearing where I did make that comment, as a minister, I'm open to reviewing it because we do that every year and we'll step through. It's not just about raising it for the sake of it. It's actually having a good reason of what we're going to spend that money on and ensuring that that money is invested wisely, and that's the process I'll go through.
I can't help but wonder whether the reason why the recommended amount wasn't reached in terms of the levy being raised was something to do with the fact that alcohol lobbyists and people within the alcohol industry are consulted on these sorts of decisions. And I wonder why that is deemed appropriate and the norm.
Yeah, I mean, the reason we chose to increase it by $5 million was that would give us time to actually implement the new investment framework. We were very clear that we wanted to accept the Allen and Clark recommendations because they said they were unsure whether the existing framework was delivering what's expected from the investment as well. So that's why we've put in the new investment framework and then happy to review the levy. And on the question around consulting the sector, you know, I'm quite supportive of that. I think that when you look at a range of issues and social issues, I think we should talk to everyone involved, and that, I think, gives better policy making.
I just hardly feel as though it's appropriate for, you know, the money, the ways in which the alcohol levy is spent, such as the fetal alcohol syndrome plan, why the alcohol industry needs to have a say in that.
Well, I suppose when you look at the sector, they are actually funding their own initiatives outside the alcohol levy. And also they do know that through consumerism and choice, mainly driven by young people are drinking a lot less than, say, my generation. They're a lot more educated and they're making smarter choices. And, of course, producers are responding to that. We're seeing a lot more alcohol-free drinks or low alcohol as well.
We've seen a lot of cases earlier this year, though, where people within the alcohol industry are fighting against initiatives such as local alcohol policies, where communities set their own conditions for sale and perhaps reveal some sort of underlying motivations that just seem to cloud whether, you know, this money is being spent in the right ways.
Well, I think when we look at the goal of safer drinking, it is important that we take all stakeholders on board with that vision, and that will include the alcohol sector. So I think that's important. Ministry of Health and Health New Zealand have a very clear policy on that is public, and I think they should be working to that as well. I think ultimately, you know, what we want to do is people make the choice of drinking alcohol, and I'm mindful it's quite a current issue as people move into the summer break and might choose to use alcohol around the barbecue or they catch up at family events. And what we want to do is make sure that we prevent as much harm as possible and people make informed decisions.
If we were to compare this to something like tobacco, though, New Zealand is a signatory of the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, which means that tobacco lobbyists are completely shut out of policy making regarding tobacco. Do you want to see something like this implemented long term for alcohol? It just seems to be quite a contradiction between how the two drugs are regulated.
Yeah, I'm not sure I agree with the framing of your question. I don't think it's comparing like for like, for example. And the reason I say that is when you look at smoking, I'd probably argue there's no safe way to smoke. It is detrimental. Whereas, as we know, for alcohol, there is set guidelines that people can drink, and they are set by the Ministry of Health. So I don't think it's an exact comparison.
What does that have to do with regulating harm?
Well, like I say, is we are moving towards not having people smoking in New Zealand, whereas for drinking, we accept there is a safe level of drinking through the guidelines.
But even still, the recommendation from Allen and Clark, the review found that an estimated $9.1 billion is the cost of 2023 of alcohol harm in New Zealand. So this is clearly a significant issue. So I just don't understand why we aren't taking this a little bit more seriously in terms of who can have a seat at the table in these decisions.
Yeah, I think we are taking it seriously from the view of this government. That's why the first government in 15 years to increase the alcohol levy, and not only that, through the Allen and Clark report, we did accept those recommendations and we've brought in the new investment framework. And look, when you look at the vision of reducing alcohol harm, I think it's important that you have all the stakeholders around the table talking about this and plotting a way forward, and that's the way we've taken, which is no different than any other government.
Thank you very much for your time this morning, Minister Matt Ducey. I look forward to seeing what the government's plans are for further increasing the alcohol levy next year.
Thanks for your time.
Have a good one. Ka kite.
You too.